It's Wisconsin Today. I'm Kate Archer-Kent.
And I'm Rob Ferret. Earlier this summer, the U.S. Surgeon General called for a warning label to be placed on social media platforms, telling parents that the platforms may harm adolescents' mental health.
This comes as social media companies have faced increased congressional scrutiny and lawsuits over their alleged role in worsening youth mental health.
The U.S. Senate passed two bills which would regulate how social media users younger than 17 are able to use certain platforms. So what links are there between social media use and mental health for teens? A Wisconsin research program works with adolescents to learn about the impact of social media and promote healthy use of platforms. Dr. Ellen Selke is an assistant professor in the Department of Pediatrics at UW-Madison. She's the principal investigator for the Learning More from Adolescents Online, or LMFAO, lab. Dr. Selke, welcome to Wisconsin Today.
Yeah, thanks so much for having me, Rob.
Okay, we got the U.S. Surgeon General Vivek Murthy saying earlier this summer there ought to be a warning label on social media platforms warning parents this could damage the mental health of your teens. What do you think about that concept?
Yeah, I mean, I've read the Surgeon General's statement of concern last year, and then he's sort of reiterated this. He talked about that there are other precedents for in public health for putting warning labels on things that we think might be dangerous, and that maybe even if we don't have enough information, all of the information ever about a topic, that we should still consider it if it's dangerous enough. And I think that in terms of the connection between social media and adolescent mental health, I think there are some clear areas where we have seen that aspects of social media can be detrimental to mental health. And I think there also are a lot of factors that have contributed to sort of the decline of mental health in adolescents over the last few years. And so I think the sort of motivation behind the warning label is grounded in some important facts and research. And at the same time, I am curious, and it remains to be seen sort of what the actual effect of that would be.
Let's dig into the wider issue now. Now, as compared to something like smoking is bad for your health, we got that locked down pretty good. The information is super solid. It seems like the relationship between social media and teen mental health, a little more complicated. To start things off, how do you even try to research? How do you try to answer some of these questions in your work and that of your colleagues?
One of the things about sort of social media and its evolution over time is that it's really hard to do an experimental sort of study where you have kids who are exposed to no social media and then a group of kids who are exposed to social media, and then you look at those differences. In our specific lab and in a study that we're currently doing, one of the things that we also do is observe what kids are posting on social media and think about sort of the actual content that they see and sort of what are the differences between those types of content. So I think a lot of the research up to this point has been a lot of sort of self-reporting and also sort of recall of sort of in the last year, how many are in the last 2 weeks, how many hours did you use social media in a day, those sorts of things. And I think that those methods are a good start. And at the same time, I think we can certainly do more to sort of understand the sort of individual experiences that young people have online. And that's what we really aim to do with our research.
And you are at the Learning More from Adolescents Online lab. You've been doing this for some time now. Given that there's still a lot of open questions, are there things you can say to parents, to teens, to say, okay, this way of using social media, these impacts of social media are something to be cautious about?
When I'm in with a patient, because I'm a pediatrician also, when I'm in with a patient talking to them and their parent about their social media use, some of the things that I ask folks to pay attention to are, what is social media potentially taking the place of? And is that thing that is taking the place of something that is important for your health? So for example, sleep is a big thing. So, you know, we know that using phones in bed can, for a lot of kids, sort of prolong the amount of time that they're awake, might contribute to, like, if you have a lot of notifications on your phone, it might contribute to you waking up in the middle of the night. And we know that sleep is so important for so many dimensions of mental health and physical health. So, you know, I think sort of paying attention to, is social media and your phone keeping you from sleeping the way that you're supposed to? Other things could be thinking about, is this taking the place of activities or homework? And is that affecting sort of your academic performance? Is it affecting your relationships? And those are the sorts of things that I ask people to think about in terms of, like, is it replacing anything that you are, that you actually need to be doing?
When you have that conversation with parents and their teens, and the answers to some of those questions might be, yes, this is cutting into sleep or exercise or whatever the case may be, how do you suggest families approach that? A ban on cell phones? Well, that sounds like a pretty ugly argument and a rough bunch of months. How do you suggest families handle dialing back that kind of social media use?
Yeah, I think there's multiple dimensions to this. One is, I think the most important thing for families is to, and caregivers and teenagers, is to have this be a shared sort of conversation. So I think that, and this really is kind of in accordance with how we think about teen development in general, right? Is that, you know, teens are wanting to, you know, it's important and normal for them to want their independence. And at the same time, I think they can still take guidance from their parents. So if you have a shared decision about, okay, how do we think, what are some strategies that we think might be reasonable to, you know, get the phone, you know, less use at bedtime, for example. I think that's important. I think what we have seen, not just with social media, but with other sorts of things that teens are interested in, is that if you completely sort of unilaterally say, you're not doing this, I'm taking it away, that doesn't tend to go well. We think about, like, some of the programs that that have taught kids about, like, substance use, for example. And we know that sort of a absolute no is not always the best way to approach kind of behaviors like that. So I think that sort of having a shared decision between caregiver and teenager is important. I also think that caregivers, in, like, sort of reflection on yourself and your own media habits is important too. So role modeling for caregivers, which will ultimately sort of help your health as a caregiver too, right? If you're not able to put your phone down at bedtime and you're losing sleep because of that, you know, I think that for your own well-being, but also for role modeling for your child, that can certainly be helpful. So those are kind of the two components that I think of in terms of making behavioral change, is sort of the parent or caregiver and child help making a decision together and jointly, and also sort of both parties being involved in the change.
One of the big concerns out there, Dr. Selke, isn't just about, you know, how much kids, teens in particular, are on social media, but what they encounter there. A lot of exposés about what they might see on Instagram, for example, or TikTok. Platforms that are not very well moderated. They can see explicit material, violent material, be stalked, a lot of bad stuff teens can encounter in there. How big a concern is that when it comes to teen mental health?
I think there are some very clear links that research has shown in certain areas of mental health between social media use and mental health things. So, for example, body image, it's pretty well known, and this is even before social media, that sort of media depictions of certain bodies and looks can lead to lower self-esteem and poorer body image, especially for younger girls. I think also sort of harassment and bullying are certainly things that have been correlated with more depression, anxiety, and poorer mental health outcomes, including suicide and self-harm. And so I think there are definitely exposures to some, like, either disturbing content or disturbing interactions with other users that can lead to mental health problems. At the same time, we also know from research that some kids who are struggling with mental health problems may actually find support through social media, especially if they feel like they don't necessarily have that in their offline lives. So I think that it's really kind of an individualized basis. And that's something that I will often ask my patients is how they feel like their use is affecting their mood.
Are there things you'd like to see either from the owners of social media platforms or government regulation when it comes to at least slowing down the flow of that bad stuff, the negative stuff that could be harmful to mental health?
I think there are definitely some design modifications that can help sort of protect adolescents and also protect, but also give adolescents agency to sort of make decisions and explore without sort of being pushed down rabbit holes and things like that. So, for example, algorithms that present content with sort of variable levels of user input or like safety features to limit harassment. Those are some definite design choices that are, I think, you know, certainly responsibilities that tech companies should have to consider in terms of safe design for their platforms. And actually, the Kids Online Safety Act addresses a lot of these things from a design tech design standpoint. I'm pretty excited about that legislation. I think, you know, it's been very thoughtful in terms of thinking of the role of the industry and not just putting all of the burden of managing this on kids and their parents.
We're talking about the effects of social media on adolescents. Dr. Ellen Selke is with us, pediatrician, assistant professor in the Department of Pediatrics at UW-Madison, principal investigator for the Learning More from Adolescents Online Lab. And Dr. Selke, at the lab, I understand you do a lot of work in particular with the LGBTQ teens, and I can imagine this being very much a double-edged sword, touching on something you said earlier, a lot of support maybe out there, but a lot of bad stuff too. What kind of things are you working on?
A lot of folks think about the risks of social media, and we certainly talk about that with our participants. And at the same time, what we also hear from kids that LGBTQ plus kids that we do research with is that social media can be a really important source of support in many ways for them. So, for example, social support from other individuals. So having folks who are like them that they may not have found in their offline lives who can sort of they can lift each other up through friendship or other validation. They also find support through learning. Learning about identity and seeing sort of role models out there who are doing okay. So one thing that kids have told me is that when they encounter these sorts of content, they had maybe felt like there was no hope for them, that, you know, they were always going to be feeling bad in their bodies or in their identities. And then they saw people online who were thriving, who were kind of like them, and they felt like that gave them hope. So I think there's a lot of positives that young people who are maybe struggling with identity can find. And at the same time, kids have also told us that you know, they are often harassed, be specific to their identity, and that can be really hard. Or seeing hate against people who are like them can be kind of upsetting. So what we're doing in the lab is we do a lot of sort of interviews with young people about these topics, and we also have a long-term study that we're currently doing that includes LGBTQ and non-LGBTQ individuals that follows the research subjects for about 2 years, and we collect all different kinds of data about their well-being, their health and health behaviors. We also do some MRI scans to monitor their brain development. And so that's something that we're really excited about, because it's really going to be able to tell us what are the relationships between social media and these outcomes over time, which is an important sort of thing that I think is a little bit lacking in today's research.
I've heard over the years a lot of efforts to train young people in media literacy, right? You read the news, how do you evaluate the messages you're getting and things like that. Is there a value in doing something like a social media literacy, the idea that, hey, when teens are going out into the wilds of the internet, they have a framework, some training to evaluate, know what to steer clear of, what to weigh differently? Is that something we're talking about?
I definitely think that that's a good idea, basically. I mean, I think that sort of school curricula, I've started to address this a little bit. I think, you know, one area that educators have done a particularly good job of is thinking about talking to people you don't know online and sort of the online stranger danger piece. Because I have noticed over the years that I've been doing this, that young people have been more and more savvy about sort of understanding the functionality of social media platforms and how to block people and how to sort of stay safe online. So I think that we have a good start with a lot of curricula in schools. I do think that there's always more work to be done, right? Especially in terms of some of the self-comparison things that kids might do, dealing again with harassment and cyberbullying. I think those are all good topics that both caregivers can talk about with their kids, but also could be addressed in school, in like health curricula, those sorts of things, or even, you know, the social sciences, thinking about sort of looking critically at news articles and information to sort of, and because I think that disinformation is certainly another thing that young people are facing online, that it also behooves us to think about.
Now, you've mentioned a couple times that you get to talk directly to teens as a pediatrician, and part of your work at the lab, in addition to surveys, you hear teens in their own voices. I'm interested in hearing more about that, because I think it's easy as adults to just assume we know what's going on and kind of map our concerns onto them. What do you hear when you actually hear teens talking about their relationship with social media?
One of the things that I just love about my job is talking to teenagers, because they know so much more than I think we give them credit for. And they are very, the kids that I talk to are very sort of self-aware. And when they talk about social media, I hear that it's mixed, that they have mixed experiences, right? I hear a lot of young people say that they feel quote unquote addicted to social media, which I think is an interesting concept that, you know, we hear, it's a word that we hear tossed around a lot with regard to social media. And, you know, as a clinician, I've always thought about addiction as something that, you know, is associated with a lot of difficulties in other areas of life, like failing school or like having poor relationships or things like that. And when I talk to these kids who say that they're addicted to social media, these are the same kids who are, you know, pulling straight A's in school. They're, you know, the captain of their, you know, track team. Like they're functioning very well in life, but they still feel that there's something about social media that draws them in, and they are having trouble regulating. So that's one thing that I certainly hear a lot. I also hear, though, that kids have sort of develop their own strategies for thinking about how they deal with that. So whether that's, you know, having an app that sets a timer for how long they use their phone, or whether they come up with rules in their friend groups for like when we're hanging out, like we're putting our phones here and not looking at our phone sorts of things. So I think we really need to give young people credit for, first of all, being self-aware, but also being sort of creative about what their solutions for self-management are. So I guess that's kind of a summary of what I've been hearing from the kids.
Dr. Selke, we'll leave it there. Thanks so much for joining us today.
Thank you so much, Rob.
Dr. Ellen Selke is an assistant professor in the Department of Pediatrics at UW-Madison. She's principal investigator for the Learning More from Adolescents Online Lab.